The goalkeeper knocks it out. It's in the net and Aberdeen are in front. Sean Hewitt. Petardry goes berserk.
Hello and welcome to the latest By the Minute Aberdeen podcast. And joining me today, I've got two Martins. First off, the regular Martin, the ever-present Martin, the pain in the arse Martin. It's Martin Clunes. How are you, Martin?
I'm not too bad, Richard, thank you.
And I got your name wrong again. Of course,
it's, you did.
We should remember that handy tip from Grant way back when, of rhyming Clunes with Soonis, and you'll never go wrong.
Deep breath.
And also joining us tonight is Dons fan and Aberdeen blogger, Martin Stone. Martin, good evening.
Evening, Richard.
How you doing?
Thanks. Yeah, good, thanks. Thanks for having me on. Always good to have a yap about the Dons.
So absolutely, absolutely. And we'll have a conversation with you later on about your blog and about where you're going to take that in the next few instalments.
Yeah.
But let's move on to talk about what was a rousing victory on Saturday against the Motherwell side who'd been in good form before the visit to Pittodrie. 4-1 win, and pretty much everything went right for us. Johnny Hayes in particular, a fantastic performance. So, regular Martin, he picked up the Player of the Year from the club during the week. In fact, he picked up 3 awards. He picked up Goal of the Season as well as the Player's Player of the Year. Firstly, do you think it was deserved? And secondly, what about his display on Saturday?
Totally think it was deserved. We have spoken earlier on in the season in the podcast, we did say that he wasn't really getting into games at the beginning of the season, but I think he's grown into the, and he's of late he's just been really, really good. He's another one of those guys that when Aberdeen are playing well, he is just unplayable. I mean, you said it on the Twitter feed on Saturday, and he was wonderful. Everybody had played their part and did quite well, but it was just the Johnny Hayes show on Saturday. And he was just wonderful. That second goal, when he just sort of, you knew what he was going to try and do. You knew he was going to drive forward down the left, try and cut in and get the goal. And Motherwell had no answer for him. One thing with Johnny Hayes that I can't wait to see as well is that there's a team coming up from the lower leagues next season that have a right back that's highly rated that doesn't really know how to defend. Can't wait to see Johnny on Saturday's form going up against them.
Well, I'm not sure who plays right back for Falkirk, but I guess we will see, because Johnny Hayes is, as we pointed out on Saturday, contracted to 2018. Obviously, there's a strong possibility that Johnny might make the Republic of Ireland squad for the Euros this summer. Martin Stone, do you think the possibility of some renewed interest in him this summer?
Yeah, he certainly looks like a player at the moment that's playing for a place in the Euros at the summer. His form over the past few games especially has been unbelievable. I mean, Saturday he was, as Martin says, he got you off your seat. He was the kind of player that you pay your money to go and see. Motherwell just couldn't cope with him, basically. I think they had one right-back coming off at half-time after getting absolutely roasted by him, and then the guy who came on at half-time got pretty much the same treatment in the second half. So, yeah, it's my big concern, I suppose, for the summer is Hayes going. I think out of all the players that could potentially, other teams could be looking at, he'd be the one who, if we lost him, I'm not sure we'd be able to replace him on, the type of money that we're able to offer. So it is a concern, I suppose. The only saving grace is that he's tied down for another couple of years, so it would take decent money to prize him away. But yeah, if he does end up going to Euros and he has any kind of impact, then it wouldn't surprise me to see him heading out the door, unfortunately.
What about those Player of the Year awards, and in fact his nomination for the Scottish Player of the Year award? I think it's maybe fair to say that he's timed his run of form probably quite well, because I don't think he was in the greatest of form maybe the first couple of months of the season, but when it comes to the time where you put your nominations in, he's really hit a good run, hasn't he?
Yeah, I guess he's doing it at the right time. I think if you look at who he was up against in those Player of the Year awards, unfortunately Griffiths has been unbelievable for Celtic this season. I think without him they would have struggled to win the league, really. So yeah, he's fully deserving of his nomination, that's for sure. And out of the team that finished second in the league, he's definitely been our star man. So yeah, just unfortunate he came up against a good contender in Griffiths, I suppose.
Martin, the man who rhymes with Soonis. I take it that Graham Shinney must have run him very close, though, for his club award.
I would think so. I mean, that would be the two guys that you'd be looking at as your kind of close nominations. I mean, they don't announce nominations, so we don't really know. But I would imagine that if it wasn't Hayes, it was going to be Shinny. I mean, we've waxed lyrical about Shinny many times on here as well, because he is just a fabulous player. But I think there was a right decision that he was edged out by Hayes this time.
Well, one downside, potential downside anyway, to Saturday's victory was both strikers that were deployed during the 90 minutes had to be come off injured. Now, potentially both of them were precautionary, but equally, in Derek McInnes's post-match interview, he was suggesting that if it was bad news that came out of reviews on Monday morning, that both Simon Church and Adam Rooney might be out for the season, which admittedly is only three more games. But it does leave us with a bit of a problem, doesn't it, Martin C? Because we've very, very effective now. And now we're going to one side, Johnny Hayes on the other. And we would presumably have to disrupt that. Maybe, well, I guess you could put McLean up top, could you? What do you think the options are?
But yeah, you've kind of nailed it there. I think it would probably be McLean up top, and you'd drop another midfielder in there as well. Depending, I mean, it's Celtic you're playing, so you want McGinn, you want Hayes to be on the wings doing the kind of trying to do the damage. It's either going to be, if unfortunately we'll lose both of them as Church and Rooney, it's going to be one of McGinn or McLean up front. I'm not really convinced about, you know, putting Kenny McLean up front in such a, I mean, it is still a big game, you know. I mean, whatever we want to talk about title races and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's still a really big game. We want to go down there, we don't want to get beat, we want to beat them and show them what we're capable of. But for me, it would probably have to be McGinn up front, I think. You know, I think you could do a little bit more damage than Kenny would.
And who would then replace McGinn out wide?
That's the $50,000 question, isn't it? Again, I think you would probably be looking to, I don't think Flood would come out of the team. I think you would have maybe Flood and Jack, and then you have a McLean probably central as well. So I think we'd probably end up with five in midfield. So then you're looking at maybe, you know, I'd like to see maybe someone like Scott Wright come into the team, but we shall see.
Now, Martin C spoke about Will of Flood there. Martin S, he played well on Saturday. Do you think there's still a place for him, if maybe not in the first choice 11, certainly in the squad?
I do, actually. I think with Robson probably away next season, we're looking at potentially having Flood and Jack as the two starters in that deep lying midfield role, unless McInnes does bring in a signing in there in the summer. I think he's been up and down a bit this season, Flood. He said his good games, and he said games where he's been absolutely shocking, really. You know, his distribution at times is letting down, but I think since he's came back into the side recently, he's certainly looked like he's got a new lease of life about him. He's getting about a pitch, he's snapping into tackles, and I think he's definitely got a future with us, whether it's as a starter next season or not, I'm not sure. I think that deep lying midfield role is one that we really need to be having a good look at. I think the games this season where we have been steamrollered by the likes of Hearts and St Johnstone in that midfield battle, I think those are the games that have cost us really in the title run ultimately. So I think if McInnes has got any kind of budget to spend in the summer, he probably needs to be looking at investing at least a bit of it in somebody that can sit in there and be kind of winning the ball back and giving it to the guys up top that can play a bit.
Martin C, Willow's positional discipline, shall we say, has been quite poor at times this season, but he does seem to dovetail quite well with Ryan Jack, and I thought Ryan was back to something approaching form again on Saturday. Motherwell obviously very little to play for right now, can't make Europe through the league. We're just playing for league positions, which admittedly are worth probably a reasonable sum of money to a club like Motherwell. Same question to you, I mean, would you have him in your first choice 11? Would you keep him in the squad? What role do you think you see him playing next year? Because again, he's contracted for another year.
I think he's the kind of guy that can probably come in and out of the side. It just depends. It depends who you're playing. When you're playing one of the better teams in the league, whether you're playing sort of, you know, we've obviously been kind of bullied in certain games by Hearts. When you're playing Celtic, I would like to see him in the team. When you're looking for, you know, to be breaking down teams and being a little more creative against, dare I say, sort of a Kilmarnock or a Hamilton, I think that's when he probably would struggle to get into the side, because you're wanting to have more creative players. And I think that Jack is your sort of, should be the first choice deep lying midfielder, if you want to use that term, because he is the captain. You know, he should be playing there. But I would definitely want Willow at the club. I think he's actually a pretty handy player as well. He does the unflashy stuff. You know, it's you don't notice when he's really having a great game. It's kind of hard to see because he's just winning balls and giving it to better players. It's when he has a bad game in that role. It's very easy to notice because you know you can't really hide if other teams are getting the freedom of the midfield. Then it's kind of Willow Flood's one of the guys who will get the blame for that. But for me, he definitely deserves his place in the squad, and he's one of those he should play against the better clubs anyway, I think.
Now, one significant change to the lineup on Saturday was the introduction of Adam Cullen for Scott Brown, who wasn't in fact in the squad of 18 at all. It would suggest that Scott Brown's time with the club is definitely up this summer. From what we saw of him, Adam Cullen, though, I wouldn't suggest that he is a substantial upgrade on what we've had over the past couple of years in terms of permanent goalkeepers. Came out for a couple of cross balls, missed them. His distribution from his feet was very poor. Certainly the goal we lost, I wouldn't attribute a lot of the blame to him, but there was an opportunity for him to claim the ball before Shinny clears it for the throw-in from which Motherwell score. That said, you have to remember that the fated Danny Ward did have a very shaky first game for Aberdeen as well. Martin S, so am I writing him off too soon, or what did you make of his performance on Saturday?
It's hard to say from Saturday, I suppose. I was pretty disappointed with Motherwell, to be honest. Given the run of form that they've been on, I didn't think they really offered too much. He didn't have too much to do. He did have a few shaky moments. There was one kick out in the second half, I think it was, where he sclaffed it right to one of the Motherwell boys, which was a bit too reminiscent of Lanfield, if I'm honest, to give me any kind of hope for the future. It's been a strange one all round, I think, taking him in January and then deciding not to play him. From what I've seen on Saturday, I don't think he's really an upgrade on what we've had. Unless he does something spectacular in the last three games or so, I very much doubt we'll be seeing him beyond the summer. I think with Danny Rogers coming back especially, looking forward to seeing what he can do. Hopefully he's number one. He's been getting a lot of rave reviews for Falkirk. I believe he was in the Championship team of the season that was announced this week. So hopefully see what he's made of next season.
Rumours this week that the aforementioned Danny Ward will actually be spending next year out on loan from Liverpool as well. Team mentioned on this occasion was Huddersfield Town from what I presume is the Championship, maybe League One in England. I don't really pay too much attention to the lower leagues down there. But it's a sad state of affairs, isn't it, that essentially money is going to talk there. Huddersfield are presumably able to pay a much bigger percentage of his wages. It's a very limited standard and style of football down in the Championship in England. There are some big sides, yes, but I mean, up here in Scotland, Danny would have had games at Parkhead, at Ibrox, he would have had European games. It's just a disappointment that automatically it seems we're not going to be able to compete there, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I agree with your general point there, Richard. I think one of the things that's meaning that he's going to go to Huddersfield is that their manager's apparently an ex-colleague of Klopp's. I think he was his assistant manager or something like that at Dortmund, so I think there's a bit of a connection there, and apparently Ward's not going to be the last person heading from Anfield along to Huddersfield. But overall, it's disappointing that we kind of really attract that calibre of player at the club more consistently. I still think if he'd been with us for the whole season, we would have run Celtic a lot closer than what we have done. I think him leaving in January really had a massive disruption on the side. The confidence that the defence had up to that point just seemed to go with Ward going out the door, really, and we haven't looked the same since. I don't think Scott Brown's been spectacularly bad, particularly. I think he's just not at the level that Ward is in terms of communication and organising and that type of thing. So it's got to be a focus for us next year, I think, is that goalkeeping position.
Now, Martin C, to kind of top the afternoon on Saturday off, we saw a red card for pantomime hate figure Keith Lasley for, you know, what was maybe a borderline yellow-red lunge at Kenny McLean. Entirely unnecessary given the context of the game. A couple of minutes to go. Now, Motherwell are actually going to appeal this, but as part of the statement they put out when they appealed, they're suggesting that The referee initially was going to have had a yellow card in his hand and was going to book him, which if you look at the footage, is true. But then they're questioning who made the final decision. Do you understand why they're questioning that? Do you think that matters?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, he had a card in his hand. I mean, I think, you know, the referee's entitled to speak to the assistant or the linesman, whatever you want to call them. And it was a borderline challenge. I see also that they weren't very happy. They compared it to one of the Aberdeen challenges early in the game, which I can only assume they mean one of the Graham Shinneys. I think it was in the first half. But that's completely immaterial as well. They're clutching at straws on that one. They're obviously appealing. I think they just want to have Lasley playing the rest of the season. Hopefully, kind of get overturned. But I mean, it doesn't matter who made the decision. I mean, we've seen in other games before where, you know, the referee will take advice of the linesman, and he's entitled to do that. I think it's Motherwell just completely clutching at straws.
Yes, and also Mark McGee has been handed accepted his one-match suspension. I'm not quite sure what he got up to, but he wasn't sent to the stands on Saturday, as we initially thought it was, his assistant. It's just a very curious ending to a game which was totally petering out at that point. Shows what daft creatures footballers sometimes can be to make that sort of challenge at that stage in the match. But there we go, that was Saturday. A welcome return to winning ways with a 4-1 win over Motherwell. So our guest tonight is Martin Stone. And Martin is, fair to call you an Aberdeen blogger now, Martin. I mean, I think that's three or four blog posts you've done now. A couple of them based entirely around Aberdeen matters. And one of them, the most recent one, on the Scottish football fan experience. And that got a lot of publicity. A lot of people read it, and a lot of feedback. So I think the thing which we liked about it most was the degree of research that you put into the blog. Can you tell us about how you would normally set out to write something like that?
Just as a way of getting a bit of writing out there, it wasn't necessarily meant to be a Scottish football blog, but it seems to have morphed into that. It seems to be the only thing I'm kind of writing about, but. Yeah, the fan experience one came about just from kind of going to matches and you know, seeing the kind of police presence sort of still is, and speaking to other fans and, you know, hearing them saying that they're feeling, you know, victimised and so they're under the spotlight the whole time. And then obviously recently the thing about the facial recognition as well. I kind of had a theory that, well, maybe, you know, are we being treated more harshly than guys on the continent, or is that just the perception type of thing? So, you know, I genuinely didn't know the answer to that when I set out to write the article. I thought, well, I'll do a bit of a dig in and see what I come up with. So, really, it was just through speaking to people online, you know, guys in Norway, Denmark, Sweden mainly, and getting feedback on their experiences. And, you know, I quickly became pretty clear that the perception on the terraces in Scotland is right, actually, that, you know, we are being treated differently to fans on the continent. They are being able to enjoy a totally different match day experience. I think, you know, everybody's heard of the Bundesliga examples where you can go and have a pint at the game, and they've got the safe standing sections and you know, the cheap ticket prices and all of that stuff. But it's not just Germany that fans are being able to do it. It's right across the continent. So, yeah, that was the intention of it. And as you say, thankfully it got a fair bit of good feedback. And it was getting discussed, you know, by guys at some of the SPL clubs. And, I was chuffed with the feedback it got, really. Whether it actually... you know, leads to any change or not remains to be seen. But as I said in the article, Celtic have got the permission for the safe standing section at Parkhead next season. So fingers crossed that the experiment goes well. I think it's, you know, it's only a couple of thousand spaces they've got there next season. But provided that goes well and it gets past the watchful eye of Police Scotland, then hopefully it'll pave the way for the rest of the clubs to do something similar. I know other clubs have been looking into it. I think they're kind of holding off at the moment to to see what the Celtic experiment turns out like. So hopefully, as I say, it'll be the kind of gateway to some clubs trying that, and then you never know, we could maybe even look at getting a pint at the game if we can be trusted to do that.
I think the key question, though, Martin, is that these changes, say we bring in, say there's a safe standing area at Pittodrie, say that further down the line you're able to buy beer on the ground, is that actually going to lead to more people through the gates? I'm unconvinced that would be the case. What are your thoughts?
Who's to know, I suppose, until we try it. What I do know from speaking to people is that we can't compete with the quality of football that's being shown on the TV and the Premiership and other games like that. So we've got to find a different thing to market the game on. You know, I think by trying to do it on the quality of football, we're always going to lose out. So we should be going totally the opposite direction in my mind, and marketing the game to a totally different audience. You know, so it's maybe less about the football and more about the day out. You see it at away games at the moment, really. You know, the atmosphere at away games is better. People seem to have a better time at away games because, you know, they've gone with their mates, they're having a couple of drinks before the game. And okay, we don't want the game to become secondary. We're all still there to watch football, but you know, just trying to make it a bit more of a fun experience, really, than the kind of sterile environment that we've got at some of the games at the moment, especially some of the home games at Pittodrie. The atmosphere is terrible. I think anything we can do to try and improve that's got to be looked at.
Now, your first proper blog post raised a few eyebrows on Don's message boards as well. But it was titled, rather provocatively, Can Derek McInnes Evolve and Save His Job? Probably not, yes. A very fair assessment of the actual piece as a whole, that, to be honest. I think maybe one or two people didn't bother to read the article based on that headline. Do you stand by what you put in that blog in terms of McInnes? I mean, how do you view him now after a second half of the season, which has not achieved what we hoped we would achieve, shall we put it that way?
Yeah, I think the use of the headline was probably a big mistake in hindsight. The amount of abuse I got just for that one line was unbelievable. But hopefully, folk read past that and read the article itself. I wasn't really having a pop at McInnes, to be honest. I was just kind of pointing out areas that I thought needed to be improved upon to kind of get us to that next level. And I had a look back at it the last day just to see if it still did kind of ring through at the end of the season. And there was bits and pieces in there that, you know, I probably don't agree with. Obviously, Logan's signed an extension to his contract now, so that kind of point that made's a bit null and void. But yeah, the rest of it, I think, is still pretty relevant. I think we still do need to find a plan B for, when plan A is not working in games. Kind of what Martin touched on earlier on, that, do we need two deep-line midfielders in a home game against Hamilton? I'm not sure we do, to be honest. I think we need to find a different way of playing. McInnes likes that formation, that's what he knows, but yeah, we've got to find other ways to win games. And I think the other point I made in the article was about the use of the same players week in, week out, regardless of form. I would still stick by that as well, to be honest. I think there's players in that team that probably could have been dropped a lot sooner. I like Sam McGinn. He's on his day, he's one of our best players, but he's certainly, there's been long periods this season where he's not contributed nearly enough. So I think his use of the squad could have been better at times. I think I'd like to see a lot more young players getting blooded. The flashes we've seen of Scott Wright, he's looked really good. I'm not sure why he's not getting more of a run. Cammy Smith gets mentioned all the time. I take people's point that it means potentially unsettling the big guys in the team, but you know, we're a selling club at the end of the day. We're going to have to blood these youngsters at some point. I think the next three games till the end of the season is probably the ideal time to do it. I'd play three or four of the young guys even down at Celtic Park. If it was up to me, give them a chance to show what they can do.
Now, last week you tweeted a very exciting photo which gives rise to a series of blog posts that you're planning for the next few months. Talk us through what the plans are there.
Something I've kind of had on my mind for a while. It was you know, a bit of a bucket list item, to be honest. Was just personally wanting to go and speak to the Gothenburg team and you know, go around them and talk to them about their careers and that type of thing. Not thinking that it would ever happen, obviously. But thanks to Hugh Little, ex-Aberdeen Asset Management mainly, got in contact with Hugh over Twitter and he pulled a few strings and managed to get me a sit-down with Simi last Friday it was. So yeah, basically the concept is, you know, going to go around each of the team, hopefully. Done the first interview with Simi, so it'll result in a blog post going up this week, so kind of just a look back on Simi's career. And at the same time, I've got three programmes from the Gothenburg game that I'm going to get the guys to sign and then auction them off once they're signed by the whole team. And you know, the money's raised will be going towards local charities. So again, I've got to thank Hugh for that. He's kindly contributed to the programmes that are going to be auctioned off. So big thank you to him. But yeah, as I say, I had the chance to sit down with Simi last Friday. Obviously, an absolute legend on the pitch, but an absolute gentleman off it as well. You know, had time for me, sat down with me, took a kind of hour and a half out of his day to just sit and chat about football. It was unbelievable, really. It was a little bit starstruck, if I'm honest, to begin with. Just sitting there, kind of telling stories about Fergie and the Cup Winners Cup run in '83. It was unbelievable. So, yeah, looking forward to getting the article written up this week, and should be online by the end of the week. So hopefully, folk will enjoy it.
Well, we look forward to reading that, and you can catch up on Martin's blog post to date and Neil Simpson one to come at www.unmodernman.net. So, moving on, last night saw the second demotion in 21 years for Dundee United. Much hilarity round at by the men at Aberdeen Towers as the frankly long and slow descent into relegation was confirmed last night by Dundee's last minute winner. As funny as it has been, Martin C, we are going to miss them a little bit, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. No, Tannadice is a really good day out. There's no getting away from that. The 3 points are always great. We're always grateful for that as well. But no, with no serious hats on, they are one of the bigger teams in the league. No, we want the kind of they take a half decent support in that every so often with them as well. You know, If you offered me Dundee United back right now and took away Hamilton, I would snap your hand off, to be totally honest.
Past couple of seasons, maybe not under McInnes, but prior to that, Martin S, really it's a case of there but for the grace of God go us. I mean, you know, we could quite easily have been in their shoes some of the seasons we had previously.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, before I get on to the serious stuff, I've got to disagree with you both. I'm absolutely loving the fact they've been relegated. They lorded it over us a few seasons ago when they had the big players there like Mackay Stephen and Armstrong. So no, good to see them get a bit of their own medicine, to be honest, as far as I'm concerned. But no, yeah, you're right. We were lucky in a lot of ways that it wasn't us. We were struggling for a good while there. So I suppose it's a bit of a cautionary tale for, you know, even for like us, for the season we've had this year, that it would only take potentially a couple of players, you know, out the door, some of our big players, and we could find ourselves in the same kind of predicament. So hopefully, you know, luckily our guys are tied onto longer deals at the moment, and hopefully we can kind of fight off any clubs that are sniffing around in the summer.
Yeah, Martin, see, that's really one of the key differences, isn't it? Dundee United sold Mackay Stephen and Stuart Armstrong last January, and they've only won about six games since then. But we've been able to retain the players we want to keep, and we're actually building a squad. Guys are now sticking around for 4 or 5 years, and the other side to that is that, you know, young fans coming through get the opportunity to really develop proper heroes, you know, guys that are going to be there for years and really build up that kind of relationship with the team and with the squad. So that's a really important change, I think, from the culture we had again previously, where guys would come in for a year, we'd have a whole bunch of trialists come in. It's a proper team now that McInnes is building, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, you look at getting someone like Graham Shinney in, where, you know, I was sitting in the south stand, you see a lot of kids going about with Shinny's name on the back of their tops. You want them to have that. You want them to get even Logan staying as well. Logan's really popular with the kids as well, well, even the adults as well. But, you know, you want that kind of affinity happening. I mean, contrast that with Dundee United. It's absolutely shameful what the people that own the Thompsons and the previous manager Jackie McNamara have done there with their, you know, selling off the crown jewels. You know, you saw. I mean, even before they sold those guys to Celtic, you know, they got, you know, I mean, Andy Robertson, Ryan Gold all went out as well, and they've just pocketed these parts of these transfer fees. And, you know, I kind of do feel sorry for some of the supporters in a way, because there's nothing they can really do about it. But, you know, it is, no, we can have our little fun and laugh at them, but it's what's been done to the supporters of that club has been pretty shameful, to be honest.
So on Sunday, it's Parkhead, and it's well, presumably the end of the league race this season. We need a win to keep mathematical wolf from the door. And it remains frustrating because Celtic remain a distinctly average side, don't they, Martinez?
Yeah, they certainly do. I suppose that makes it all the more galling that they've managed to, or it looks as though they've managed, barring any mathematical freak results, that they're either going to win the league. But yeah, I think overall they've been really poor, as I said earlier on. Take Griffiths out of that side and I don't see them as being any kind of distance ahead of us. You know, the goals he's got have really dragged them over the line. But I can only imagine they'll have to strengthen in the summer. You know, new manager in there, and he'll be looking for a bit of money to spend. So yeah, I can't see him being as poor again next season. I suppose that's what makes it all the more annoying that we weren't able to capitalise this time around. Massive opportunity missed, in my opinion, unfortunately.
But we've got our own issues to address, and I think one of the first one is the slump in our away form since the turn of the year. And we talked about it last week, that of the last six away games, we'd only won two, lost four. It's not the best of venues to try and change that, Martin C, is it?
No, it isn't. I would imagine that there's going to be a fairly decent home crowd for the first time this season there. They're going to want to put the pressure on us. You know, they're going to be there to celebrate their title win. We need to kind of stick to our own game plan. I mean, I would like to think that, you know, we'll be keeping a fairly similar team. I think we'll probably keep a fairly similar team to what we saw against Motherwell. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with the forwards, but we need to try and turn. I mean, I know it's the end of the season and there's very little left to play for in terms of, you know, we know what kind of prize money we're going to get, etc. But we need to kind of turn around the form and finish the season as strongly as possible. And the last thing we want to do is go down there and continue in a away form slump and, you know, lose by a couple of goals. I would think that would just be, you know, a really kind of poor way to end the season. I mean, and you're right, you're completely right when you say Celtic are an average side. I mean, you know, for me, Lee Griffiths has won the league by himself for them this season. It shows the difference when they can call in on someone like the guy Patrick Roberts, who's, I think he scored three goals in the last five games or something for them. He's on loan from Man City, who paid £12 million for him. He's going to be there for at least next year on loan as well. It's, you know, it just highlights the gulf as well that, you know, no, we really are kind of playing catch up, and we're always going to be.
Martinez, the other Martin, says he wants to see much the same side as we played against Motherwell. So that means he'd like to keep the same centre half pairing and goalkeeper. It certainly gives us more physical presence. Adam Collins, a big lad. Considine and Taylor are equally. Would you agree with that?
Probably in the absence of any alternatives, I would probably go with the same three again. Yeah, that we had on Saturday. I think taking Reynolds out of the limelight for a few games is a good thing. His confidence just looks shot to bits recently. He hasn't really looked the same player since he came back from injury, really. But the past few games especially, he's not looked a shadow of the player he was last season. So a few games out of the spotlight might do him good. I suppose my big concern is Ash Taylor still. He started the season quite poorly. You know, the kind of pass back on the first day of the season against Dundee United, and then he came on a game, but he seems to have kind of faded away again, to be honest. Every game now seems to be at least one fresh air swipe, and positionally he gets caught out quite a bit. So in the long term, I think Ash Taylor's probably my biggest concern. If we're going to get the best out of Reynolds again next season, I think we may need to look at getting a commanding centre-half in alongside him, somebody in the Anderson mould that got the best out of him when they were paired up previously. I'm not sure long-term Ash is the solution, unfortunately.
Yes, if only there were another Lotto Anderson kicking about, maybe one that was 10 years younger, that would be absolutely perfect. It's been brought up a few times this week, obviously Leicester winning the league down south. A lot of people said they should be an inspiration to sides like Aberdeen, but really, do you think they can be? I mean, look at the wage budget they're able to spend, the quality of player they're able to actually bring in. They can go and bring in Kante for $5.6 million during the summer. You're going to get a certain level of quality, you're going to get a certain level of consistency at that level, which is going to enable you to put out a good team week in, week out. It's just not the same for us up here, is it? Or am I being, is all the romance taken out of my soul? Martin C.
The thing you can take inspiration from is it shows that when you have, and when you look at maybe like a Man City or a Chelsea, they don't have a huge, squad, bloated squad of players. They've got, haven't had many changes in their team this season. It's been the sort of same. I mean, I will it be proved wrong, but it's probably been about the same 17 or 18 players for the bulk of the season, and that kind of helps. I think that helps as well. And what they've done is, they're not really a vastly attractive side to watch. But what they've done is they went on a good run, and they found a way to keep on winning. When we had the games at the start of the season, and we had a blip. It led to a few losses, and that's the difference. I think that's the difference, where you can take inspiration from what they've done, in that they found a way to just grind out results and keep on winning games and beating. They weren't attractive when they beat Chelsea or they beat Man City, but they were getting results. They were doing it right. They've got a couple of players who can play attractive football. Mahrez, for example. We've got a couple of players that can play attractive football. We've got McGinn, Shinney, and Johnny Hayes. So there is sort of a comparison there, but when you do bring in the wage budget comparison, it completely throws it askew. I mean, we're never going to see Aberdeen paying big transfer fees again. We'll never see a £1 million player being paid by Aberdeen Football Club. We've done it once; it'll never happen again. So it does. I mean, the financial budget thing, you can't use that as a comparison at all. I mean, I think it would be silly.
Martin C. spoke, I think, in broad terms there about the importance of a team and the fact that Leicester had used very few players. And I think that is maybe something which we, for the most part, had an advantage over Celtic this season. We had a core of players who played most weeks. Celtic had 26 first-team players, and trying to keep them all happy and involved was obviously proving difficult, hence the frequent chopping and changing that they would embark upon. That said, though, with a very early start to Europe, it does mean that by the second half of the season, there are accusations being thrown around that some of our team are being tired because we're not able to rotate. It's not easy to strike a good balance there, is it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think there's got to be a happy medium. I think Celtic are at one end of the spectrum where they've got too many players. I think I read something about they've got 12 kind of first-team midfielders on the book or something ridiculous like that. So, they're obviously at one end of the spectrum, and I think, unfortunately, we're at the other. I think we've just been a bit too skimpy on the squad numbers. I think you guys have spoke about it before, but going back to January, if only we'd been able to take in one or two just to lighten the load on the likes of McGinn and Hayes, and the expectation on them to produce the goods every week. I think a couple more bodies in the squad would have been massively beneficial to the last couple of months of the season, but. Yeah, I suppose that's my kind of thoughts for the last three games, is we're going to have another early start next season with the early Europa League campaign. So, if it was up to me, I realise there's still kind of pride to play for, but I'd be giving the likes of McGinn and Hayes a rest over the next few games and, give them an early summer holidays. They may well be going to the Euros anyway, so give them a few weeks off before that and get a chance to rest up before next season, because I can't see the squad being massively boosted in terms of numbers next season. I think I'll be, as McInnes says, I'll be probably two or three, and that'll be our lot. So, the tiredness thing's probably going to be a factor again next season.
So, the return of the oft-missed feedback topic this week, and we asked you, what bizarre, weird, strange, outlandish piece of Aberdeen FC memorabilia do you have? We got some great responses, as usual, from you out there on Twitter. First off, Johnny Fitbar, he says he used to have an NFL-style jersey with wee holes in the fabric, broad-shouldered, big white numbers with our logo on it. Definitely sounds like it was a total knockoff, that, Johnny. I don't know where you would have picked that up from, but it's definitely, I suggest, unique. There won't be many others people that have that. One thing that a couple of people brought up, Scott Bremner was one of them, and Alex Geddes was another, was a celebratory European Cupness Cup Alison McCarty coal sack. And Scott Bremner actually tweeted us a brilliant photo of it. I think I recall, because I used to have one as well back in the day, because my dad and my granddad both used to work at Alison McCarty. There was actually two done up, one prior to the final, which says, Alison McCarty congratulate AFC on reaching the Scottish Cup final and the Cupness Cup final in 1983. And then there was one which they put out afterwards, which obviously congratulated them on winning both of those trophies. So yeah, just a big white coal sack with red stripes and the AFC logo on it. Can't think of too many other clubs in the world which would have that as as a piece of memorabilia. We mentioned Hugh Little earlier on in the show, and Hugh says he's got a superb drawing done, 1986, of me and Willie Miller looking quite similar. Willie Miller signed it, saying there is only one Willie Miller. If Hugh looked quite similar to Willie in 86, that means it was a big bubble perm and moustache. Hugh, obviously, these days, he's got his picture up on Twitter. He's got less hair, shall we say, and no moustache. And we're happy to report that that's much the same with Willie Miller. So Hugh maybe does still look the same as Willie Miller these days. Martin S., what have you got?
Yeah, when you asked me this question earlier on today, straight away I thought, you know, I don't think I've got anything. But I had a wee dig around the house and turned up a few bits of tat. So the first one was a punctured AFC football signed by legends such as David Zdrilic, John Stewart and Scott Muirhead. I found that in the back of a cupboard, so I'm sure that will do me well in my retirement, that one.
I think it's very apt that that's punctured.
Yes. And the other one was bottom of a drawer, actually. It's like a weird AFC neckerchief type thing, almost. I'm pretty sure it's never been worn inside Pittodrie, because you'd probably get chased out of the place for wearing it. But yeah, I'm not sure of the history behind it or how I even came to have it, actually. But yeah, I'll maybe sport it at the last game of the season, see what kind of reaction it gets.
Back to Twitter, and another fantastic find was from JP Moff. Now, he says that his mum has some kind of strange tea towel from what he reckons is the 50s. And it is, it's a fantastic piece. It's predominantly red. In the centre are some footballers wearing Aberdeen kits. And the old Aberdeen logo, just the old, before the sort of net design was brought in, is a sort of, you kind of wonder if it maybe dated from winning the league in 1955 or something. It's a tremendous piece, and to still have it and still looks in very good nick. Just, again, a one-off. Nobody else, I'm sure, in the North East will have one of those right now. Greg Taylor has a signed top from the Copenhagen game. Not just any signed top, it's Jamie Smith's signed top. So yeah, that's a very, very nice piece of AFC history going on right there. Jamie obviously scored the first two key goals that night on what was probably the biggest European night for 20 years at Pittodrie. Callum Shanlon, who works over in Canada, has taken over Canada. Well, God only knows what it is, to be perfectly honest. It looks like some bizarre cat gonk with an Aberdeen hat on it. It could even be homemade, Callum. I don't know whether this is the sort of thing you get up to at home over a weekend, but we'll tweet that photo out later tonight and you can see for yourself just how weird that was. You said you were going to send in a better quality pic, Callum. I'd rather you didn't, but never mind. Alec Geddes, who also had the coal sack, says he still has a European song, a Northern Lights record somewhere. I'm sure quite a lot of us still have that. And also he's got the limited Cup Winners' Cup final programme, the Spanish version. Martin C., what have you got?
Well, I'm not really one of these collectors of stuff, you know. And I mean, I did mention earlier on the season, my prized possession is my Living Design top that was signed by Tony Kumbare. But that's probably my one-off sort of collector's item. I do have a couple, you know, little bits here and there. I always remember, you know, when I was littler, I always got a wee thing. I think the one at Cadona's, it was the carnivals, and it was this really nice mirror I got. And yeah, you know what's coming here, because I think you probably won yourself.
I think that's my answer gone.
And yeah, really? And is it the one where they've spelt Pataudry wrong as well?
I don't recall that, but yeah, that was going to be my answer. The shitty fairground AFC member.
I've got the one in it, so they've managed to spell Pataudry wrong as well, and it took me, because I was probably only about 6 or 7 when I got it took me a while to notice, and then it just went in the cupboard.
Back to Twitter, and again, some excellent stuff. Now, Graham Boyd, he sent us a picture of his custom-made Xbox, all in red, covering with the Aberdeen badge and a little avatar of him wearing a Don's top, and with his Twitter handle replacing Team Recruitment as a sponsor. A fabulous bit of kit. But sadly, not for the likes of you and me, not for us mere mortals. Graham's able to get one of those because he actually works for Xbox, but it looks absolutely amazing, it really does. He says he got it in 2008 and it's still going strong. And now Gary, who says that he was given, as a 33-year-old, an AFC piggy bank signed by Rory Fallon. moving swiftly on, Gary. Michael Stevenson tweets us with two fantastic photos. One of the Lego version of Pataudry, which was advertised, I think, right about Christmas time, yeah? And that's looking very good in his house, all set up. And the other one is of a pool table with the Don's badge festooned on it. So two statement pieces there in Michael Stevenson's house. Rory West says that he's got a pair of AFC socks, which I've never seen Aberdeen win while wearing them. I'd bin them if I were you, Rory. And Neil McPherson, he's got an A4 bit of paper, which says on it, reserved for Gothenburg greats, which might not sound like much, but it's from the 21st anniversary showing of the Aberdeen versus Real Madrid game at the AECC in 2004, where obviously all apart from Gordon Strachan were in attendance. I recall Mark McGee being there and being very, very, very drunk as we were sat in the row behind him. And he's got that placeholder bit of paper signed by everyone who was in attendance. So that's a very nice bit of memorabilia there. Jamie Robertson has got a pair of signed goalie gloves. You might be asking, you know, which former custodian has signed them? He got Ian Jess to sign them. Fair enough. And finally, Sandy Vitti says that he's got a signed programme, I guess you'd call it, from Drew Jarvie's testimonial dinner, which was held on the 27th of February 1982. So it's got the current team, but it's also got guys like Archie Glenn, who won the title in 1955. So again, that's a very special piece for Sandy. So some great stuff out there. Thank you very much for sharing them with us. And we'll make sure to retweet some of the best so you can see that on our Twitter account as well. That's almost our show this week. Thank you very much to Martin Stone for joining us. Martin, thank you.
Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Once again, you can catch up with Martin's blog at www.unmodernman.net. And thank you once again to Martin Clean S. Martin, thank you.
Always a pleasure, never a chore, Richard.
Finally, tonight, sad news in the Don's world when we heard that Norman Goldie had passed away at the age of 88. Now, Norman will be a familiar face to anyone who's attended a Don's match home or away over the past, 50 years, I guess. Norman was always decked out in some form of AFC clothing, and on match days, famously wore one red and one white sock. He'd also walk all the way to Pataudry from his home in Torrey and walk all the way back as well. As a hardy man for you. Now, he recovered from a cowardly attack on him back in 2007. And in the aftermath of that, money was raised for him by fellow Aberdeen fans, which shows the esteem in which he was held by the support. Another thing which shows that was that he was awarded by the Don Supporters Trust in 2012 one of the inaugural Don's Awards, Don standing for Distinction of Notable Service to AFC. And it was well deserved to Norman, man who you could always rely on to be seen around Pittodrie and you'd instantly be cheered up just by seeing him. So our thoughts are with his family today, and we did suggest that it would be a fitting tribute for the side to copy Norman and maybe wear one red and one white sock of the next home game. But whatever's done, we'll be thinking of him. Rest in peace, Norman. So with that, that's our show tonight, and we'll see you next week. Good night.